Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
You know, I'm baffled. Okay, you know, there's only one way to figure out I need answers. It's time, Corey. It's time to ask the Strode.
Oh, Lord.
I need this. Okay, now you have watched Star Trek Voyager?
Yes.
Okay, so you know a lot of it. I forget where it is, up until season 3. I think they're in the Delta Quadrant, and they don't really deal with the Borg, and they kind of soft into it, you know, because they, like, one day they're on a planet, and they uncover a Borg body, and they're like, oh, shit, we knew it. And then, of course, the big cliffhanger where that's where they discover the Borg are at war with, is it species 8472 or whatever the hell they called it?
Something like that, yeah.
So, later on, they have an episode where the Doctor's emitter, which is like from the 29th century, allows him to walk around the ship like a hologram or without dissipating, interacts with some of Seven of Nine's nanotechnology and becomes like a 29th century Borg, which is pretty much immune to anything the Borg currently do. And it saves Voyager from a Borg cube. It ends up dying on a bed. And of course, as we walk around, as we leave, you know, Seven of Nine's upset and the body's left. Later on, there's another episode with species 8472 where they've decided that the Borg ain't a threat, the Federation's more of a threat, and so they make a perfect mock-up of Starfleet. And, of course, Voyager infiltrates it trying to figure out what's going on. It was really kind of an interesting play between two parties that don't trust each other, have reason not to trust each other. But as part of the storyline, they call him the cadet. He gets beamed up to Voyager, and when he realizes he's actually on Voyager, commits suicide. And then they use something to convert him back into his real form, and that's when they discover it's species 8479. Last thing we see is that body on the table. My question is, what happened to these two bodies? I mean, these are like major league geek plot points. I mean, one of the things that I was reading something about, I think I can't think of the guy. He was doing his version of Doctor Strange. He was talking when, is it Sidorak died? And this is just his version. He says they basically find this 10-mile-long body in the Sahara Desert. And they're like, not only are they figuring out who was strong enough to kill him, but the body was left behind. And it's got who knows what type of minerals and other types of exotic chemicals and that they might run across. I mean, we see that even in the Avengers movie and in the comic in Nowhere. You know, they're inside a celestial's head, you know, making a planet of it. I'm like, here you got two bodies in the Voyager universe that are very, I mean, this is their chance to study just how dense the gene chromes or whatever it was that made the 8472 unassimilatable, and you still have a body of a 29th century drone. I mean, these guys reverse engineer shit all the time. What happened to the bodies? I need to know. Okay, I'll let you off the hook. Okay, Corey, how many miles in the Gotham, or how many miles in the Batman 66 TV show was it from the Batcave to Gotham?
16?
Close, 14.
Okay.
Sorry, you only get a nickel for that.
Okay.
That's all I got.
All right. We have a theme this week.
Yep, it sure is.
Because today was box day for me.
Yep, sure.
And you're lucky I'm on the show. Because, you want to do this all on your own?
Yep. Sure. Well, I'm sorry. I was listening to a live podcast with our good buddies, Stefan and Dave Kofel.
Stefan.
And I don't know. I pronounce it. I could say Steph. Should I clean it up for you? But all he said, all apparently he says while she's talking, doing her live videos, yep, sure is. So I said I was going to incorporate it in this here podcast. So, yep, sure is.
All right, show's yours. The floor is yours.
Yep, sure is. Isn't this where you start cleaning the floor?
I already am.
Okay.
Actually, I'm not going to pay attention until you're done because I got the Final Crisis Omnibus and the thing's big as a house.
I know. I'm sitting there thinking I probably should have gotten it, but I just, you know, what's in it that's not in the regular comics?
Well, hold on. Lift the damn thing.
Jesus, sure is. That's it. This is basically Corey working out for the day, so. Yep.
Okay, I've got it.
He's got it. Oh, baby, he's got it.
All right, we have Batman 676 to 685, 701, and 702.
Okay.
Birds of Prey, 118, DC Universe Zero, DC Universe The Last Will and Testament, Final Crisis, 1 through 7, Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds, 1 through 5, Final Crisis Requiem, number 1, Final Crisis Resist, number 1, Final Crisis Revelations, 1 through 5, Final Crisis Rogue's Revenge, 1 through 3, Final Crisis Secret Files, number 1, Final Crisis Submit, number 1, Final Crisis Superman Beyond 1 and 2, Flash 240 and 241, Justice League of America 21, Superman Batman 76, Teen Titans 59 and 60, and Terror Titans 1 through 6.
See, now out of all those, the only ones that I kept the Legion comics, and I kept the Final Crisis 1 through 7, the Batman tie-ins. The other ones...
Oh, you got to have the Superman tie-in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the 3D ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got those all in a comic pack, and that's my Final Crisis thing. I think that's what did it for me when I was looking at the budget is I thought, you know, I've got most of these, ironically, still in comic form. Most of the time I've blown them out, but I kept these. And the other tie-ins I was like, I either didn't have them or I threw them out. Like, the Will and Testament was really... not necessary, in my opinion. But then again, when you're dealing with Grant Morrison doing the main event, man, any tie-in is going to be just poor.
Yeah.
Although Prez did the Legion.
Yes, he did.
It. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I love how. Okay, we're going to do this story with George Perez that fixes the Legion of Superheroes. He toss it right out the window with the new 52. It's like, nah, screw that.
You know, and that's why I said, for me, the DC end of universe ended with Final Crisis.
Yeah.
You know, it was a good, you know, Flashpoint was kind of whatever. But, oh, well. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll pick it up. I mean, you know, as we record this, the MCBA's Fall Con is like, what do we got?
It's one, over.
2, 3, 4, 5 days away. So, when this drops, it'll be over. So, next week. Not only will we be talking previews, but I'll also give kind of a con wrap-up. And who knows, maybe I'll pick up a copy of Final Crisis there, because usually somebody orders way too many and we'll be blowing it out. I hate to be the only one to have the Omnibus. And then, of course, if I do get the Omnibus, I'll just sell the comics on my eBays.
Now, are you going to go to the convention? That was a couple of days ago.
Right now...
There's some timey-wimey stuff.
Bubbly. Not to mention the fact that we recorded one of the future podcasts last week, which will be coming out. Oh God, I'm doing
January.
Math. January. So and next week will be after, and then we'll for the next one. And I don't know. I think I've just given in the last 10 minutes given a nutshell of a podcast. So.
I think in the last 10 minutes, you've more
I mentioned the eBays. I mentioned the Coffels. I mentioned the con. I mentioned the previews coming. We've talked about everything except, I don't know, what's there left to talk about?
Comics.
Well, let's do it.
Well, I thought this week, Because we often talk about comics we like, but what are the five comics that we like that we're still buying as comic books? We're not buying them as trades. We're not buying them as omnibuses. We're buying them week to week, month to month, or, you know, sometimes it's every 2-3 months. But stuff we're buying as the what they call now floppies.
That is so... I mean, that is just... yep, sure is.
It's offensive, except...
Well, it's not like you're talking about your Wang.
No. Or and Batman's.
It's not, you know, really that's why computers kind of fail, because they went from 9.5 to 5.5 to 3.25. You don't want to, you're going backwards.
Although the phones are getting bigger again.
That is true.
I have noticed that the new, one of the new phones has a stylus in it. And it's like, oh, I loved my stylus when I had a PDA. No, not public display of affection, personal digital assistant.
Ah.
But no, these are the comics that we still buy as, what do we want to call them? Do we want to call them floppies? Do we want to call them,
I think you said it best. We buy them monthly. We yep. don't wait for digitals. We don't wait for the graphic novels or the quarter boxes. We got to have that fix month to month, which is actually somewhat of a fading art in the comic industry, because, you know, older guys like us and gals, you know, there's still a lot of people buying comics, but not a lot of younger people. They're not getting that weekly habit of going in and wanting to pick stuff up.
Well, I think that one of the things that is not talked about much anymore is that a lot of the people who are in their you know, late 20s, in their 30s, started by buying manga. They started by buying Pokemon and One Piece and Inuyasha and stuff like that. And they, you know, they tried putting them out as monthly comics, but people didn't buy them that well. But then when they started putting them out as the small collected books, that's when the sales really took off. So I think more and more you're going to see people who get into comics who came from that market will look at regular monthly comics as, wow, you don't get a whole lot for your money, but I'll buy a book. I love buying a book. So we'll do it that way. Joe, I'll let you start.
Well, and one of the things that Corey does, he usually sends me the topic he wants to talk about. And so I get to look at his list and compare. And sometimes I think, you know, I shouldn't take the wind out of his sail, but by God, I'm going to just grab one of his, because actually there's two of ours that fall into play here. And the first one, and I count this as a comic that even if I were to give up all comics 100%, I would still buy this one. I'm talking about the title, and you've heard me blab on about it every time there's Box Day, Knights of the Dinner Table, published by Kenzer and Company since 1994. And it's in a mixture of stuff. It's kind of game-related. So if you're a gamer, you really want to be picking this up. But I've got an issue here. Usually their cover is a spoof of something. They have letters pages where they're talking about usually the last couple issues. I mean, they tend to turn around their mail pretty quick. Then the comics themselves, they fall into a couple categories. Usually you get the core group of people. They're basically gamers. You've got Bob, I jump in here, Corey, help me describe these. Bob's kind of what, a drifter, professional, balding, middle-aged guy?
He's a guy who's in it for the hack and slash.
Yeah, and his buddy... Dave, same thing. I mean, if you just set up a campaign where, you know, really you got to talk or puzzle your way through, nope, I'm going to roll for initiative, hack and slack my way through it. There's Brian, who is kind of the rules guru. If there's an angle he can get at, he will figure a way through it. Up until recently, his character has been kind of obnoxiously entertaining, and he's kind of gone over a crisis of faith and kind of a conversion.
Yeah, he's learning the error of his ways.
There is Sarah, who is a cousin of the main DM guy who we haven't mentioned. Again, very no nonsense. She would much rather talk out with a potential conflict, right? Whereas Dave and those other guys would just hack and slack and go for experience points. One of my favorite panels is where I'll mention him. I can't think of his name. Bryn Fart. Who's the main DJ? DM.
I can't think of the name right off the top of my head.
Belton. BJ? TJ?
Something like that.
But he's the guy who sets up hours on end and sets up the campaign only to have the guys totally destroy it in a matter of minutes. And this is driving me crazy trying to figure out his name. And like I said, Sarah would just rather sit there and talk it out. And of course, whenever the guys make a lewd comment, she'll just as soon pick them up by the neck and put them in their place very quick. So those are the main guys. Those are the knights of the dinner table. There are other groups, Patty's Perps, the Black Hands, different groups. They have different dynamics. They play for different reasons. So you got not only their game playing and the inner dynamics between them, but then you have the actual play of the game themselves because they're playing characters. And sometimes it's very compelling what they're doing. Just in terms of the narrative of the game, you want to know what's going to happen to their characters. And then of course there's the community around it, the Hackmaster guys. It's just an amazingly rich world, considering the art is kind of how would you say, second hand. Even the guy who puts it together, Charlie Blackburn, he'll admit the art's not the biggest thing. Matter of fact, he's mildly amused when people call and ask him, you know, could you do a character for me? If you look at my Supergirl album on my Facebook page, he actually did a drawing of Sarah as Supergirl, because he knows I collect the Supergirl. And he actually thought that was kind of funny that I would ask something like that. The rest of the comic is basically games. You know, you've got the letters page, back room at the game pit, where it's kind of an opinion area. There's Tales from the Table, where people talk about gaming, and I actually talked about it when I sent in something and they used it. There's different workshops where they have like characters and hooks and equipment and traps and things like that that you could incorporate into your Hackmaster or Dungeons and Dragons or whatever D20 game you play. And then in the back, there's a couple articles. The game indie scene, which, you know, much as we talk about independent comics, they talk about independent games. There's the Blogosphere Renaissance. They used to have some guy doing comics. Another person does Lost Game Safari, where they take games that are kind of out of print and talk about them. Off the Shelf, talking about new ones. They used to have somebody doing a column on movies, where it's like, how would you take this movie and convert it into like role-playing? And the back page is some more one-shot cartoons, as well as parting shots, which is stuff you could actually send in. Matter of fact, they do take submissions. So if you're if you've got a drawing itch and you'd like to send something in, or you got an article that you think would be worth the magazine, you can definitely send it in. The other thing that's fun is you can try it for free. Go to the website, www.kodtweb.com, Knights of the Dinner Table web.com. They have a daily strip. They have individual issues, not only physical ones if you buy it, but they also have digital ones. They also have a compendium of their stuff. I actually own, I believe, almost one of every comic available. And the first couple ones I actually bought at one of Greg Ketter's stores back when I think he called it Dreamhaven back then. It was up top of, at the time, Campus Drugs. And I went up there and I was digging through his back issues, and I found 1, 2, and 3, I believe, and maybe issue 6, I can't remember, of his books. And I read them, and I thought they were so cool, but I never found them again until he set up his shop again after going to England and coming back. And I think in England's where he met Neil Gaiman. You'd have to ask him to be sure. So I actually have some of the early ones. The early issues go upwards of $400 if you can find them. That's how few of them there were published. But fortunately, you can get the compendiums, which are still in print. And like the first one has the first 4 or 6 issues in it. And you can get caught up without having to spend a lot of money. You can buy the digital stuff if you're so inclined. There's also a number of one-shots and series. Hang on a second while I fire up the old Kraytron 300. There's the Black Hands I talked about. They had 3 specials. There's a number of books. Bag Wars Saga, The Java Joint, where they've taken runs of these series that ran over issues and formed a complete storyline and put them together. There's Tales from the Vault, which I believe is there was a magazine called Shadis, I believe, S-H-A-D-I-S, which was a game magazine that they had done a strip in. And those magazines are long gone, probably recycled, lucky if you can find them. So they have those available through the Tales from the Vault. No! do we know, will we be, if it does, I mean, eventually it's just going to upgrade. And that's where we had the problems last time. It wouldn't answer.
What happened, Adam says that it records right now, but only on video. So we still got to wait a bit.
Okay, so I just got to keep ignoring the, hey, time to upload. Fuck you.
Well, you could probably upgrade.
Yeah, but last time it did, that's when you would call me and it wouldn't answer. Well, so I'm not going to until it you know, till D-Day.
Okay.
So I don't want to fuck with it until I have to. Anyways, what were you fading? What did it fade on?
You were finishing up talking about Knights of the Dinner Table.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I enjoy picking this up because it's like revisiting old friends, and I get to see them once a month, and it's just, that's what I absolutely love about it. Corey, you had it on your list. What makes it a must-buy?
Okay. Well, there are 2 reasons it's a must-buy. The first is that the collections miss out on a lot of stuff because I like all the extra subject matter. I don't game anymore. But there for about 10 years I did, and who knows, I might start gaming again. I like the gaming articles. The collections, I think they only, what, reprint 3 or 4 issues?
And they're years behind.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons. But other, like you said, it feels like it feels more like a very comfortable old soap opera. Where you're checking in on the characters, there's drama, their story arcs go for a while, the characters are changing somewhat, which is good. But I like the fact that for $5.99, it's an entire package. You get a regular comic's worth of comic stuff, plus some extras, plus a bunch of articles, plus a letters page, which up and down in quality. Sometimes the letters page is really good, and sometimes it's just a bunch of, yeah, you guys are great! But
B.A. Felton, that's his name. The DM, I couldn't remember his name.
Yeah, that's right, B.A.
Yeah, we knew it was some initial, TM, B.A., B.S., one of the 3.
But it gives you your money's worth for the package. It's more a package than just, you know, here's this month's comic and it's $5.99. No, this feels like a magazine. Joe, what's next on your list since you grabbed one of mine?
I know, I'm a kind of a rat bastard that way, but I learn from the best.
Yeah, thief.
I'm only a goody one shoe, though. I don't know where the other one went. For me, and I've raved about this before, Savage Dragon. Eric Larson's book from Image started in 1993, and I will stick with it as long as he sticks with it. He actually was going on in his Facebook page about, would you guys stick with me if I did something different? And I said, whatever you do, I'm with you. Savage Dragon, essentially, it's changed a lot. Because initially, it was about an amnesiatic dragon, hence they call him that dragon. He was found alive, burning in a field. And one of the police who found him had him join the Chicago Police Department, super-powered ace in the hole on their war against crime. And he had, blah, 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 blah. Well, he's been doing it for a long time. 93, the shoe. Hang on a second while the Kratron figures this out.
Carry the 4.
Yeah, dang, I hate math. Why do that? Math is hard. If there was ever a Kray doll, like, feel free to use that one. You don't have to, no controversy there. They're up to issue, I believe, 238. And Eric Larson has done almost every single issue. I think number 13, the Image Boys decided to switch everybody's books. But he had since came out with his own 13. He's done a 0 issue, which described the origin of Savage Dragon. In fact, everybody in Savage Dragon goes through time, I believe, at our pace. Because now the book is about Dragon's son, who is, I think he's a cop. I'll explain why I'm a little worried about that. I'm not sure. Savage Dragon committed a crime. He went to trial. He was found guilty. He's in jail. His son continued on in the story. The reason I'm not quite sure is because what I like to do with his books is take about 25 of them in a chunk, sit down, and read them in a batch. And it just is so much fun to go through it. He doesn't stop and do a lot of recap, which could hurt him in the long run in terms of trying to new readers on. He does do different variant covers. I'm proud to say, I believe, with the exception of some of the early newsstand editions where the only difference is the UPC codes on it, I have almost all the variants, I think. There was even, like, in 225, he did a explicit 25th anniversary variant cover that the guys at the Source got from me, or for me. I'm able to get, he did an Oscar exclusive edition, which was, a fast food joint out where he lives. And I got it through the eBays. He's done a couple experiments where he did one that he made it pocket sized, kind of like little, I think it was about the size of a digest. And then, of course, he had his regular size. So he's not, and he also did the do it on sideways version. He's willing to try something different just to keep it interesting. He's still in the Image universe. At least he believes it's a universe, even though everybody's kind of disappeared off into their own. You'll often see his character cross over into others. He's appeared in Powers magazine or a comic book. He's also had a number of miniseries, a number of regular series, a number of crossovers with Superman and other. And he's, of course, involved with saving Howard the Duck. Do we want to get into that story, Corey?
No.
No.
That's for some other podcast where we can go for about a half hour on it.
We've covered it, too. So, and the funny thing was is that there was its version, and then there's, I think it was a Marvel Team-Up.
Yep. It was Team-Up written by Gerber. So
they were like, and the two, the you didn't see Savage Dragon in the Marvel one, and you didn't see Spider-Man in the Image version, but they were talking to each other in shadows, which I thought was brilliant. A number of editors didn't. But again, you can Google that controversy or dig it up in the old podcast. For me, Savage Dragon, I mean, I've been collecting it since the beginning. I've enjoyed it. And again, it's really simple. If you don't like Eric Larson, you don't like his art style, you never need to buy it. I enjoy his writing. I enjoy his art style. When I hear he's doing something else and he has, you know, I think what did he did Spider-Man in the beginning before he branched off into Image. And
he did Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol. He did
Shrapnel. He created the character Shrapnel.
And who can forget the most insidious villain of all, Heavy Flow, Never mind. I don't want to remember that.
No,
it's as bad as you think it is.
Johnny Redbeard, which was his version of John Byrne.
But who is he had the one villain, Powerhouse, who was basically a Superman type character with a chicken head.
God.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And again, there's the graphic novels online. I'm sorry, I say I take that back. I don't know if he is online, but there are books you can catch up with. How can I forget? I'm just looking at one where there's two issues. One, he uses the bad word. One, he doesn't. And it's basically Satan fighting God. And the moral of the story is don't beep with God. Or if you happen to get the non-censored version, don't fuck with God. So, I mean, how can you not love shit like that? So for me, I'm in the long haul. What do you have, Mr. Strode? Are you doing top to bottom, or are you just randomly picking?
I'm just grabbing them before you do.
I know.
I have a series that's two series, but really, really, once I tell you about it, it's one series. And that is Haunted Horror and Weird Love. These are monthly comics, well, kind of monthly, by Craig Yeo that reprint old 50s horror comics that have fallen into public domain.
Yep, sure is.
Haunted Horror is the kind of the, I'm not going to say bottom of the barrel, because some of the stories are good, but for the most part, it's just kind of crappy 50s pre-code horror. And some of them have good art, and some of them, not so much. But it's a really good selection of what was being published back in the 50s during the horror boom. And it did well enough that they did a spin-off of one of the strangest subgenres in comic book history, horror love comics. Let me repeat that to you. Horror love comics. And I'm shocked that he's found
enough.
We're
not talking Interview with a Vampire here.
No, we're talking, well, there are, you know, a woman falls in love with a vampire sort of stories. But it's not paranormal romance. No, these are horror comics that have kind of like romance comics. And okay, it's just weird. It's just really weird. And those stories are just strange. And as you read them, the whole time you're just kind of going, the hell were these people thinking? But I like comics history. I love the Atlas horror stuff. And this is kind of one step below the Atlas horror stuff. At the top, you had EC. Nothing came close to EC. Then, one step under that was Atlas, which, I'd always heard was terrible, but in Marvel reprinting a lot of this stuff in the Masterworks and on Marvel Unlimited, there's some great art. You got Russ Heath art, you got Gene Colan art, you got John Buscema art, you got Joe Manili art, you got Ditko, you got Kirby. The stories are disposable, but they're well told and they're fun little, six, seven, eight page short stories. One step under that is the stuff that they're reprinting here. And there's a reason it's all public domain. And every time a new issue comes out, I'm just giddy about the fact that I get to read more of this cheese. Joe?
For my next one, it's a character, and he's currently being published, Doctor Strange. Not to be confused with Doc Strange or Doctor Stranger or Doc Savage or Doctor Strangelove or Hugo Strange or any other use.
Mr. Monster.
In one way or another, I mean, he's had, four or five different volumes or series, and the current one's being done by Mark Waid. I pretty much enjoyed almost all of them. There was a kind encounter with the Scientist Supreme that I thought was really, really odd. In the past, I've talked about my first exposure to the original stuff that Ditko masterminded was in the small paperbacks that they sold in stores, and I was able to pick up a couple volumes. I believe the first two covered pretty much the entire Strange Tales run, and then the second one, I'm not sure where it fit, but thanks to the essentials, I have an omnibus or two, And I do have complete runs starting with the second series that Steve Englehart and Fred Brunner started with back in 74. And since then, I've had all of them. And it gets tough because it was the Midnight Suns crossovers, which I know I've been trying to piece together. And he's appeared in miniseries. He was hanging out with the Avengers for a while. Every so often, he'll just show up in one shot. So there's still more of him to discover. It's kind of fun to see what type of take someone's going to do with it. Again, much akin to the Voyager rant I did earlier, there are always little bits and pieces that they've never finished with or they've never covered again. I think Corey and I we actually covered Doctor Strange back and did a pretty good synopsis of some of the series going through. So you can, again, I wish we had our podcast indexed. Now, there's a job for someone, a dedicated fan.
I'm still waiting for us to get a Wikipedia page because we are a national treasure.
It's true. And now, of course, with the movie, I mean, it's...
We've got a movie?
Well, not our movie, Doctor Strange movie. Sorry, didn't mean to get you too excited. And the current run of Doctor Strange, I'm trying to find it as I repower up. Are we on the fifth series already?
Oh, I'd have to look.
Hang on a second. Let me see what we get here.
Because each miniseries was counted as a volume.
I believe it is. Yeah. No, it's a fifth regular series because that's the one that Mark Waid and Jesus Saez is doing.
Yes.
And again, I'm not necessarily hip to the what Mark's doing. But again, Mark Waid, I'll stick with him. He's one of the guys, my highest accolade. Mark, you could write the phone book and I would read it because it's always fun to see where he's going with it. And as long as there's a Doctor Strange series being published, I will probably pick it up. Earlier I was babbling on it. It's the mightygodking.com where he goes at length through what I would do if I wrote Doctor Strange. And if I was in Marvel, I would just pay this guy a lot of money to write a Doctor Strange comic. And I've enjoyed his stuff. And, of course, I even enjoyed, what was the amalgam one?
Doctor Strange Fate.
Again, another character I would love to see return. But so, yeah, another book. It doesn't quite fit up there with Knights of the Dinner Table or Savage Dragon. Again, those are two books that I would probably buy. If I had to cut all comics for whatever reason, these would be two. First two I'd probably buy no matter what. Doctor Strange would be one that once I got the funds back on my feet, I would go find and pick up again. So that for me is number three. Corey, what do you got for your third one?
Cerebus. And I know a lot.
Wait a minute. Cerebus isn't being published. It's over. He died and went wherever Rick wasn't.
He went to hell. Because there was a miniseries, Cerebus in Hell. But they're doing a series of Cerebus comics. With a new number one every month.
Oh, wait a minute. Explain.
Well, Sim is doing a comic strip online. Where he takes sure classic is. Art. Usually from Dante's Inferno. And superimposes some Cerebus drawings from the past on it using Photoshop. And basically he's doing four-panel comic strips. And they are collecting these as monthly books, but also adding new strips. They have not done any collections of these. So I am picking them up as a regular comic. I always feel like I need to put a disclaimer here. Yes, Dave Sim is a horrible human being. But that does not mean that his art and his ideas and what he is doing is horrible. He is keeping a lot of the religion and misogyny out of this. It's more about Cerebus ranting about things in the afterlife. Not all the jokes are great, but better than most. And Dave Sim is somebody that you just kind of have to pay attention to. I've talked about how Cerebus, after issue 186, was very hard to read, but it was still incredibly well done. You know, the guy is a master cartoonist. He knows the comics medium, And if this is how we're going to get his work, I'm okay with it. I even liked Glamour Puss, which is weird because Glamour Puss is a book where you kind of went, I don't know why anybody would want to read this. Dave Sim talks about the fashion industry. But I look forward to every other box day I get a new issue of Cerebus. This month it is Crisis on Infinite Cerebi.
Easy to spot on the shelf because you'll be walking by and go, hey, there's a Crisis cover.
Joe?
For me, I'm in a transition period. In the next couple previews and months, I'll probably be dropping series that I've been sticking with for a while. I get to a point where I've been collecting something so long. For example, Avengers. I mean, and you've heard me rave on and on about the Jonathan Hickman run. And before that was Bendis. And I'm, new creator team, I'll give them 6 to 10 issues, give it a shot. You can tell by the fact I mentioned Avengers, it's not quite working for me yet. So sometimes I find myself looking at titles like, especially when Corey mentioned the topic we were going to do this week, and I'm kind of like, am I buying this because I want it, or am I buying it because I am just buying it on autopilot? And it's not just a Marvel thing. It's a DC. Justice League's on the bench, too. I'm kind of not quite sure I'm with it. And I enjoyed the Dark Knight Metal run, So, I mean, I know where they're coming from. So I kind of looked a little closer at maybe some newer series that have just started up that I'm really having fun with. And one came to mind right away, Oblivion. So you got a lower register. Song from Image, Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo Di Felici. I'm not sure if he's Italian or not. There's only about 7 issues so far, so you should be able to catch up fast. If you have the dreaded collector edition, it's worth about $200. So there aren't a lot of variants that are going to drive you nuts. And the first book just came out, and Image has put it at $9.99. So if you want to try it, you can. If you're going to skip the next bit, because this is going to be kind of spoilery, but essentially the protagonist in the book, an event happened that created, I think it's what they call the Oblivion. And if you're in there, just these crazy creatures are hunting and killing the humans, and a number of people disappeared, including the protagonist's brother. And he is going into the Oblivion and bringing people back. Ask your own questions. How do people feel about being in there? Do they want to come back? What happened? Why did this occur? Is he doing this on his own? Should he be doing this? What happens? Will he ever find his brother? Well, you got 7 issues. I've been enjoying the ride so far. I imagine a lot of people are jumping on board this because Kirkman's doing it. And, if you've been with him in Invincible and certainly been with him with Walking Dead, he will deliver over time. And as a matter of fact, he keeps promising a lot of stuff in his letter columns. All this stuff's happening. It's like he's a kid that just wants to tell you everything, but he's going to not because he wants it to come out in the story. And I've been enjoying it, and I think I'm going to be on board for a while. I'm trying to decide if I want to stick with the monthlies or switch to the trades. But I think I'm just going to stick with the monthlies because the story is easy enough to follow month to month. Sometimes I'll pick up a comic and I know I read the last issue and I'll read it and go, I don't know what was going on. Maybe I should stop and wait for the trades. But in this case, it's not happening, and I'm actually enjoying quite a bit of it. So I don't know if you're reading it, Corey, if you have anything to add.
Nope, I am not reading that one.
Are you planning?
$9.99
for Image.
Yeah, I'll probably pick up the trades eventually. It's a lot like when he did his Wolfman book. It's okay, well, it seems to be going. I'll buy it when it's done or when there's a big chunk.
Yeah. So, That's what I enjoyed. And there were some other ones that that almost made the list. Eclipse is one from Image. But again, what they do is they do like six issues and then stop for a while and start another six. So I kind of took ones like that off. Copperhead was one like that. Books I enjoy, but that's, again, why I don't necessarily buy the monthlies of these. I would rather just wait and do the graphic novel. And even like Brian Hibbs said a number of in his last Tilting at Windmills, the problem with Image is they throw all these books out there and you have no idea which ones are going to stick around or which ones, like you said, are going to just stop. And kind of annoying. But this one I've actually been pretty excited about. What you got for number, what are we on, four?
For number four, it's another book by Kirkman. I still buy The Walking Dead as a comic. I know that the vast majority of people now have moved over to the trade paperbacks or the hardcovers or the big thick monsters that you buy.
Me, compendiums. Not quite omnibus strength, but big nonetheless.
But I really like it as a monthly comic. The letters page is anywhere from 4 to 6 pages long. There's usually, they have a lot of previews of upcoming Image books, so you get an idea of what they're about and what they look like and if you might be interested. But also, it's really written as a serial. It's written as a monthly comic book. And while it does come to an end from time to time, it really has that thing that I like in a monthly book, which is it's a soap opera. Each issue moves the story along, but it leaves a lot of threads open so that you're waiting for the next month. I think the only time I bought it as a trade was the first 6 issues because my comic shop didn't get me the first issue.
And it's only a couple $1,000 right now.
Yeah. So for that one, it's like, oh, okay, well, she didn't pull the first issue for me. I'll wait till issue 7 and start buying it as a comic because I'll just buy the trade for the first 6.
You fool.
Well, I have the first printing of the trade, if that matters. Probably not.
I'll go look.
But Walking Dead, and again, it's another where it's the letters page. It's the package. It's more than just, here you go. Here's 24 pages, a comic, and a bunch of ads. So that's another one on my list. Joe, we're now to your final comic.
Well, last week I sang a beautiful virtuoso to Batpole. This week I will sing for my number one, actually probably is my number one pick.
Spider-Man, I'll buy Spider-Man when I can. Been buying it since 178. I like it, it's really great. Look out, I buy the Spider-Man. Wah, wah, wah.
And again, there's been a lot of different Spider-Men. I don't know what volume they're in because, you know, the series ended in 98, restarted in 2003 with issue 500, stopped again, started again. I think they're back to legacy numbering. There was a brief time where it was the Superior Spider-Man. Oh, Dan Slott, thank you. That was so awesome. It just was a lot of fun. And sometimes I feel I'm buying this on just... Like I said, I've been buying it so long, I just feel weird if I'm not buying it. I have the essentials, so I pretty much from 1 through whenever the last essential, I have them, at least in black and white format. I suppose I might go omnibuy. I don't know. I'm not really – I just want to read them. You know, in those early books, remember, I read in those little tiny paperbacks when they first came out. So for me, it's just fun to read them. My daughters started reading my essential. Matter of fact, I got to get my number one back from them. And I will just stick with it. I've dropped it occasionally, notably right before McFarlane started. Although I was able to pick them up. I don't have an issue 300, though, because, I mean, good Lord, when it jumped to $200, I was like, give me $200. But I got them, and I'm sure they're on Marvel Unlimited, and
oh, yeah.
I can pick them up as well. And I had to stop and think about this one because, again, it's the character as much as the book, because, you know, I didn't pick up the current run of Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man until you raved about it. And then I went back and picked it up, and that was a lot of fun. Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man, the original run, I remember picking that up. Again, number one, I think it started already. Marvel Team Up, I picked up. It was just a lot of fun. Anytime Spider-Man appeared in different issues, I'd pick them up. And I'm sure there's plenty of them I didn't pick up. And that's not even counting things like Ultimate Spider-Man or Miles Morales and things like that. Oddly enough, in all my lists, I don't have any DC comics. And I don't know if that's because I'm buying monthly DCs. I just, you know, we talked about Final Crisis in the beginning of the show. I think that kind of did it for me, for them. And, you know, they're going to have to win me back. And next week we'll talk about previews, about which ones I might be recommending or which ones I buy. But there isn't a single character there that's being published in a monthly that I'm like, oh, I got to buy this because I really love the character, you know. But for me, Amazing Spider-Man's last on my list. And, you know, I'm not quite sure where the current team's going with it, but it's been entertaining so far, so I think I'll stick with it and see where they end up. What's your number one, Corey?
My number one is also The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep, sure is.
And it's mostly because even though they do Marvel's, okay, this many issues in a trade, they also, it's a soap opera. Are Peter Parker and Mary Jane going to get back together? What's going on with Peter Parker's job? What's going on in the background? Who's his new roommate? And why doesn't his roommate realize, you know, why is Peter Parker roommates with one of the villains?
What's he going to do with Kingpin being the mayor?
Yeah. What's going on with J. Jonah Jameson? You've got all this history, and they do. Spider-Man was kind of the original Marvel soap opera. You know, you had the Fantastic Four, and it moved out of soap opera pretty quickly into, you know, cosmic stuff. But Peter Parker was always, you know, will the kids at school quit being mean to him? Which of these girls is he going to go out with? Is it Gwen or is it Mary Jane? You know, what's happening with Aunt May? It's set up to be a soap opera with fight scenes, and it's perfectly done like that when it's firing on all cylinders. The Dan Slott run, I'm still amazed that he was on that book for a decade, because it did not feel like it. It always felt like he was fresh and exciting and new. And then Nick Spencer came on, and I've loved the first five issues he's done. It's just, there's something to that. And the other thing is, the other book that I read, you know, Joe talked about, Spider-Man was the first book he picked up. For me, it was Fantastic Four. But that was the book that really broke my heart in the 90s, because it became so unreadable that I finally said, I'm not enjoying this. I'm only buying it to keep my run intact. And once you break that first run, you don't care anymore. You're no longer, oh, I have 400 issues of this in a row, but I don't care now. And Spider-Man, I can't think of any runs other than from like 206 to when Roger Stern took over around 223, 224, where I was buying it because I felt I had to buy it. There's even the issues in the 80s and 90s that weren't very good. They were fun and exciting at the time. Don't go back and read stuff like Maximum Carnage.
Don't do it.
No. But and the other thing is, Spider-Man moves with the times. They keep it updated. Yes, Spider-Man in the 90s, really a 90s book. And then in the 2000s, they had JMS on it, and they changed it. And Dan Slott came on, and he changed it. And now Nick Spencer, one of the things that I really liked was he set up this premise that for other writers, this is going to go on for over a year, year and a half. Nope, five issues. Done. Moving on to the next idea. Which I really like. I like the fact that he's moving, that series is moving really fast. So, there you go. There is our 5 comics that we buy as monthlies. We have a little bit of time left, Joe, before we have...
We do?
Yeah, because we've only been talking, you know, really for, I don't know, what, about now, 45 minutes?
Which is weird, because usually we plan these out. I mean, we used to have, like, we're going to talk about the top 10 comics we're going to do. And
they go 2 hours. $4
specials, yeah. So we thought we better cut it back. This is something new.
But I wanted to talk... This weekend, I didn't work as much. I did get roped into working more than I was supposed to. And if you follow me on the Facebooks, you'll see the pie that they made. They made a homemade pie to get me to stay an extra 4 hours on Saturday. And it was amazing. It had this wonderful crumble top. And but I got to read a bunch of comics.
You did?
Yes, the first one I read. And these are the four that I liked. I'm just going to talk about the ones I like. The first is the first book from Ahoy Comics, which is edited by Stuart Moore. He runs that line. He was editor at Vertigo. Tom Payer and Jamal Igel are doing a book called The Wrong Earth. And what it is, we are told about two Earths. On one, it's Dragonfly, and the other, it's Dragonfly Man. And one is very much Adam Westian, old chum, superhero universe, where everything's bright and things are happy, and it's all a game. And in the other universe, it's dark and gritty, and there's death and destruction, and something happens, and the villain, the main villain in the story, and Dragonfly switch Earths. And that's the only premise I'm going to tell you about, because I was reading this, and first off, the art is Jamal Igel, one of the better superhero artists in comics, and even though he's the only one drawing it, it looks like two different art styles completely. And the second is that the story is very surprising. It's a fun premise. And the other thing that really blew me away was how quick it went. You know, there's a lot of story in this, but it's boom. Oh, wow. They give you a complete package at Ahoy. There's interviews with the creators and a short story by Grant Morrison. Not a comic short story, a prose short story. So, The Wrong Earth. This is a buy. The next one I have is As Guardians of the Galaxy, which is kind of a goofy name, but it's basically a bunch of the other characters in Thor out on dealing with Marvel Cosmic. So you got Valkyrie and Scourge and... some other characters who I don't want to spoil, out running around in Marvel Cosmic. So it's really more of a Thor spinoff than a Guardians of the Galaxy spinoff. But if you like your Thor comics, the most recent Thor comics, it's written by Cullen Bunn. It's not written by Jason Aaron, but that's okay. It's still really good. The next one I'm going to recommend, The Bully Wars, which is written by Scotty Young. And when we did the previews thing, I said, oh, I buy anything by Scotty Young. Joe, do you remember the Ralph Snart?
I do.
This comic reads like a Ralph Snart book. Three nerds are starting high school, and their junior high bully begins to torment them. But when they get to school, well, he's a freshman, and there are other bullies who have won the bully wars. And they pretty much make mincemeat of him. It's that same sort of Bigfoot cartoony style, very broad humor. Again, I was reading this, and what kept going through my head is, this really reads like it's done by the guy who does Ralph Snart, Mark Hansen. So if you like that style of humor, you'll really like this. And then the last one is a book that I cannot recommend highly enough. I have said in the past, I'm kind of amazed that with Dungeons & Dragons being popular for so long and fantasy novels selling so well for so long, that there aren't a lot of fantasy comics. Well, Image has a new book. It's been out for a year, so there are 12 issues, two trades. called Scales and Scoundrels. And I read the first six issues over the weekend because I read the first one and went, okay, I got to read them all. And it's the story of a rogue who has some weird connection to dragons. And she is out looking for adventure, stumbles along a dwarf, a young prince who's out on a quest to, you know, to prove himself, and the king's guard. And it's a Dungeons and Dragons adventure. You know, they go to a cave, and they're attacked by bandits, and they're going to this cave, which leads down to a lost city, where there's supposedly tons and tons of treasure. And three of the characters are female. The only male character in the group is the young prince. And I love this comic. The art is in a very light, almost European style. And it reminded me a lot of Bone. It's orcs and dwarves and elves and princes and rogues and magicians and on and on and on. It was like a really good fantasy novel. There's nothing here that upsets any of the standard fantasy tropes. There's nothing here earth-shattering. It's just a very well-told story with really good art. That's Scales and Scoundrels, and I'll be talking more about that in the months to come as I read the second volume. Joe, was there anything over the last week that you read that you want to recommend?
I only read one thing, but I'll talk about it when we get to geeking.
Oh. So you're going to hold out on the people?
I am.
You know who doesn't hold out on the people?
Who's that?
These guys, our sponsors.
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks.
And there's all sorts of podcasts coming, especially since when this podcast drops, I'll be in the middle of five days off in a row. So I'm going to be using that time to stock up on podcasts, mix some of the stuff that we've got sitting in the vault that's been sitting there for a while. That way, when you're out and I'm out, we'll still have podcasts for the people, because it's all about the peeps.
Podcasts for the people!
And here's us talking about the podcasts that we do.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that?
And now that we're done with that, we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where I let him go for another 15 minutes about bat dicks. It's Joe! What's going on the eBays?
Lots of stuff going on eBays. Couple of the different things I sold. A couple issues of Naughty Bits. That's was a series from Fan Graphics by Roberta Gregory. And it was her take on all corners of life. Some shocking. She tackled religion, sex, smut, comics, just about any controversial topic you can think of. She even takes to task Robert Crumb and the role women have played in his books. And went on for quite some time. Right now, I think she's just doing stuff online. But I decided to, as part of the shrinkage of my collection, that I would sell bits of it off. And like most of the independents, it's the later issues that had higher pricing because you know, nobody was buying them. And all of a sudden, there people are like, hey! So sold a couple issues out of that in 2011 and well no just 2011 Marvel Comics, coming off their Annihilation fund, did a two miniseries called The Annihilators. First one was just Annihilator, second was Annihilators Earthfall. And again, kind of what we were talking about, they took some cosmic characters: Silver Surfer, Beta Ray Bill, Gladiator, Quasar, Ronin, and had them attack the Dire Wraiths because they were they apparently controlled the Cosmic Master DNA or whatever. I don't know. It's from the Thanos Imperative. You can look it up. And in the back, they had a backup of Rocket Raccoon and Groot. So those were kind of fun. And then also Earthfall, they decided to visit again. They came to Earth to fight the Avengers. And I had the miniseries, sold them. You had your chance. For my youngest daughter, Holly, she gave me a copy of The Last of Us, American Dreams, which was published by Dark Horse in 2013. 19 years ago, a parasitic fungal outbreak killed the majority of the world's population, forcing survivors into a handful of quarantine zones. It was a video game, wasn't it?
Yes, a very, very popular video game.
So there were, there's a book out you can find, or if you're lucky enough to afford the back issues, well, you can't through me because I sold mine off. Reaching way, way back, I had a Mantra comic because, you know, I'm still trying to get together my run of Ultraverse. Well, this was one of the variant covers, the Ultra 5000 Limited Edition. And what they had done is they took them, they slapped foil on the cover, and they slapped Ultra 5000 Limited Edition on it. Pretty clever, huh? But not all the variants are equal. This one sold for a mere $2.49. And it has allegedly a $16 back issue price. Although, again, eBay's makes kind of level things out for a bit. They're from Devil's Due, 2002. I sold a Love Bunny and Mr. Hell's one-shot. Love Bunny's a superhero. She wants to strike sexy poses and kick the snot out of those who prey on the weak. No superpowers, bit of a klutz, irritable bowel syndrome. So, you know, a little bit of effectiveness is a superhero's question. I'm not sure who Mr. Hell is, but you can pick up the issues and find out. Corey, did you pick up Red Wolf, the second series that came out 2016?
I did not. I wanted to read it on Marvel Unlimited, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, well, you can do that. You can pick up the book. You can find the back issues, in my opinion, in quarter boxes everywhere. Maybe not the variant covers, you know, because they had a dozen variant covers. But the only thing they did is they got them into the future. Oh, damn, I spoiled it. Anyways, I end up selling that. Final thing I'll cover, Deadpool Annual 1. How can you not enjoy a crossover between Deadpool and Madcap? Well, you can't get it from me, but there's tons of other things you can get from me. Check out Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. I'll get to it when we get to geeking. I did a little exploring last week, and I found some things that are going on the eBay. So let's we'll get to that as soon as we can. Corey, we always start out freaking.
Well, wait, I have to do the introduction.
Screw it. What are you freaking on?
No, I have to do
that. I'm making you go first.
No. I must do the introduction, Joe.
Well, then you go first.
Fine. And now we get to my favorite part of the show.
Yep.
No, not when Joe orders me around like I'm his cleaner.
Yep, sure is.
It's freaking and geeking. What I am freaking on, first, we found out over the weekend that the people behind Comicsgate and the Diversity in Comics, which hates diversity and doesn't really seem to much care about comics, are suing Mark Waid.
For?
Defamation.
Oh, what a dumbass. That is like the hardest shit you can prove in court.
Well, not only that, they're saying that Mark Waid is the one who got their book canceled at Antarctic Press. And forced them to go to Indiegogo. He also, he got the editor-in-chief at Marvel to call Antarctic Press and cancel and kind of put the hit out on it, to which Antarctic
Press... So Mark Waid is the reason we had raccoons on our show. And Mark Waid's the reason my hip sucks. And Mark Waid's the reason Mount St. Helens blew up. Just how fucking powerful is Mark Waid?
Well, he can't work at DC anymore, so he's not that powerful.
Well, let's put it this way. Do we have an idea who's funding this? Because, I mean, defamation lawsuits are really tough to prove.
And the lawyer that this person got isn't a defamation lawyer. He's a bankruptcy lawyer.
Oh, boy, this is going to be fun.
The lawyer that Mark Waid got is the guy who was able to get $2.7 billion out of Libya after Libya shot down that passenger plane. Now, here's the other thing that I want to point out, because I've been reading what lawyers are saying about this. First off, Mark Waid will be able to do discovery. Discovery means that they will be able to get all of the videos that this guy has posted, where he called Marvel editors... basically called them prostitutes, where he said horrible things about comic creators, saying that they looked like or probably were pedophiles. Constant attacks on female creators and editors, and some really brutal things about the LGBT creators. On top of that, you know what other thing they can do with discovery? Anybody who has engaged with him on Twitter in a positive way, they can subpoena all of that. This guy is taking the...
wasn't too thought out.
No. It's basically, how people... There's even a line for it. It's, you're going to internet sue me. He basically got a whole bunch of money from Indiegogo, from fellow right-wingers, to buy his book, and he is using that money to fund the lawsuit. Oh, it's going to get ugly. I've talked in the past about how different people got into comics. You know, Roy Thomas was a teacher. Mark Waid was a lounge singer. Hilary Barta said that he was a terrible janitor. No one has ever successfully sued their way into the comics business. He has basically made it so the only way he's going to do comics, which was his goal the whole time, is to publish them himself, because nobody will touch him with a 25-foot pole after this lawsuit, if his finances survive it. So that's why you're seeing on Facebook and Twitter a lot of people saying, I stand with Mark Waid.
I'm going to have to go put that. Well, maybe I'll sit with him because, you know, I do have an impending hip operation.
Yeah. But this sort of stuff, it adds to the freaking for me, because it's one thing to have a disagreement, but if you're trolling people and they fight back and you sue them for defamation, first off, defamation's really hard to prove. Second, this guy has said some really, really, really horrible things in public. And now it's all going to be brought up in court. This is going to be ugly for him. And it's going to make the people who are involved with him even angrier, because they always have to, you know, people like this, trolls always have to have an enemy. Someone's always keeping them down. You know, that was the one thing about Howard Stern. Howard Stern on radio had to have an enemy. He had to have somebody to yell about. And a lot of people, when he went to satellite, well, he's not going to be able to yell about, you know, the FCC, and he's not able to yell about this. And it did take him a while to figure out how to redo his shtick. And I started writing up a big, long thing about the history of talk radio and all that, and I just finally threw it away and said, you know what, doesn't matter. Trolls need to have an enemy, and when they take it into court, they always lose. So this is going to be an ugly lawsuit, and the people involved in it are just going to get meaner and nastier. And the second thing I'm freaking on, my stress level is really high. And I talk about how I have generalized anxiety disorder, and what most people feel at around a 2 or a 3, I feel at about a 9 or a 10. The group home is going through some massive, massive changes right now. And they're not communicating with us as to when things change. When I went into work last night, I found out, oh, four of the clients are moving to their new cottage tomorrow. Huh, what? So I basically walked in. One of the clients doesn't want to move, so she was freaking. So they didn't give us any, they didn't give, you know, the weekend staff any notice of this. There was no communication that this was going on. So I walk in. It's all been word of mouth, and I'm dealing with one of the clients who's, you know, angry, confused, nonverbal, refusing to go to bed, grabbing stuff to put in a box because, you know, she's going to move. She's going to take as much as she can. So there's that. At the office job, they've put three new people around me because they know I can help them. Meanwhile, our call levels, while they're lower, are much more complicated right now because we're about 3 weeks away from open enrollment. So the calls we get are people whose situations are really confusing and strange. And like today, I was on the phone with one woman for an hour, and I swear I only talked for about a minute and a half. I would ask a question and she would just go. And it was an hour. And at the end of it, it's, we've put your information in. This is being handled by the upper echelons at your company. They will get back to us when they get back to us. I know that this is hard for you, but they're the ones who have to make this decision based on a bunch, you know, this isn't just, you know, us saying yes. This is the legal department has to look at the stuff you've done and decide, A, if they're going to make this change, and B, if you've been defrauding the company. So work has been very, very stressful. And, there's other stress factors going on in my personal life I'm not really going to get into because they bore the hell out of everybody. But my anxiety level's at about a 9. I'm really glad that I'm getting these 5 days off, even though on these 5 days off, I got to go to the doctor for my annual checkup. I got to go to court for this ticket I got for the accident. And there's all this stuff I need to do to get the house ready for winter. So that's what I'm freaking on. Joe?
Yes?
What are you freaking on?
Not as much as you. As again, this is one of those future timely, whimly happened in the past thing. But it's a Monday. On Friday, I will find out what's going on with my hip. And next week, I will tell you what's going on with my hip. But my feeling is that, you know, I got my blood sugars down. My eyesight's returned to normal. I think all systems are go. You know, speaking of paper snafu, you know, I sent in this thing for a voluntary leave donation. One of the managers suggested I do it. I wasn't really going to because it's just more paperwork. And, of course, I filled it out wrong. And, you know, it kind of upsets you. But then I sit back and I go, you know, they're not telling you this because they're being assholes. They're telling this because they want you to get it taken care of correctly. But it's red tape and it's always frustrating. It basically boils down to apparently, you know, I'm on FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, for my arthritis. Well, my hip's caused by my arthritis. So when I put in for the voluntary leave, where if you had extra leave, you could donate it to me, I assume they have my paperwork. They know I'm arthritic. Subset rheumatoid. Apparently, no, it goes to a different area. Even it goes to doctors are all in the same building. But apparently they go different directions through the bureaucracy. So I have to get more medical documentation, which is fine. I get that all on Friday. So in the meantime, my arthritis has decided to attack my wrists and my hands and my fingers. Corey, think of all the neat things you get to do. Matter of fact, you're doing some of them with your hands and your fingers that I just can't do without pain. Mouse tapping. Answering the phone, trying to twist open a goddamn bottle of Diet Mountain Dew. Just killing me. And, you know, I go between icing and hot, and I take my meds, and I'm, you know, I'm on painkillers already for the prep hip, and it's... Mick Jagger, you said it right. What a drag it is getting old. Enough of this. Corey, what you geeking on? What's got you happy?
Well, by the time this episode airs, Doctor Who will have started.
Ooh, oh, great. That's a freaking, because I don't have enough to watch it. I got to wait till it comes out on disc.
Let's see. I talked a little earlier. I was asked to work late. I was only supposed to really work till 8:30, but they put me in one of the cottages where there's the most clients, and there were three clients who were refusing to get out of bed. I could stay until the med pass was over, which usually is about 8 to 8:30, and I left about a quarter after 10. But I got a pie.
You did?
And the pie was amazing. Let's see. I had time to watch some TV, Joe! Have you watched the series on the Netflix called American Vandal?
Not yet.
American Vandal was fantastic. It's a satire of the true crime documentary. And the documentary is that it's set at a high school. Someone drew 27 dicks in spray paint on teachers' cars. And the student who was accused of it, they tried to prove that he did not do it. And it's a 10-episode... And it's hilarious, it's poignant, it's really smart in that it uses all of the tropes of those, like Serial and Mind of a Murderer and all the shows on, Discovery ID or whatever that channel is, where they break down, you know, a murder or 48 Hours. They use all of those bits to just cover this, and it's funny, but at the end of it, I felt really bad for a lot of the characters in this show, because it really captures what it's like to be at high school, and I, you know, when I first heard of it, and people said it was funny, I thought it would be, you know, just a lot of jokes, but really, it's very well done, and while it is funny, it's also very smart and very sharp satire. I have got all kinds of stuff to watch on this vacation, by the way, Joe, because last week, Ring of Honor had their Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view. New Japan Pro Wrestling had one of their super shows in America, which is broadcast on Access TV. WWE's got their latest super show in Australia with Triple H versus The Undertaker for the last time. And all kinds of stuff in the wrestling world. And I talked about it a little a month ago when they had All In. Wrestling has really picked up, especially if you're looking at the WWE and going, I don't know. New Japan is kicking it. Ring of Honor is kicking it. NXT is unbelievably good lately. It's just old school wrestling with feuds instead of stories. And boy, I can't wait to just pop me up some popcorn, have Saturday night off and Sunday night off to stay up late and watch this stuff. Also, it's October, so all of the haunted houses are open, and I will be going to the haunted hayride with my friend Dice, like I did last year. And I got two more. One is the Final Crisis Omnibus, which I talked about a little bit. Oh my God, this thing is huge. Let's see, how many pages is this thing? Does it say? Oh, of course not. This is as thick as the New Gods. This is one thick sumbitch. This is at least 1,300 to 1,400 pages long, Joe. That's some massive reading. And, that's pretty big. And then on top of that, I also want to get the four miniseries that spun out of it, The Run and those. I ought to be able to get those trade paperbacks for, like, I don't know, a dollar? And one of the reasons I bring up that is the last thing I'm geeking on. DCB Service announced that they are moving back to, I think it's Fort Wayne, Indiana. And they were very honest about it. Joe and I talked a while back about how their service kind of took a step down. And books were being shipped out late, and they weren't getting back to you on time. And they knew this. And they did the expensive thing of moving back from Kentucky to the Chicagoland area. Because the service, you know, they knew the service wasn't as good, and they just weren't getting the right people down in Kentucky. So I'm really happy that they're moving up to the Chicagoland area. Maybe some of the people who worked there before they moved will come back, because their service has taken a hit, and if they move back to Chicago, I imagine that the service will take that step back up again, and they'll be, you know. Before they moved, they were the best. I loved them a lot more than Amazon. They were, you know, very responsive. They were very good about packing stuff. Stuff got here pretty quick. And I'm hoping that that happens again. Joe, what are you geeking on? Other than all that porn you're downloading.
I know. Just clickety click. You know, I almost feel bad because I'm going to be talking. You guys must think I'm weird because I talk about comic books, how much I'm enjoying, and then I talk about regular books. Oh, this is all about train crashes. This is all about, you know, airline mistakes.
Doom, despair, and agony on me.
Well, this one's even better. Command and Control by Eric Slush.
Oh, I love that video game.
Yeah, well, you probably wouldn't love what had happened while you and I were growing up reading comics. This guy also did Fast Food Nation, if you ever heard of that. Essentially, in 1980, a Titan missile silo in Arkansas caught fire. And I don't want people to panic. It did blow up. Obviously, it didn't, you know, nuke up because the warhead, I think, ended up traveling about 200 yards, but it wasn't armed. So, and the high explosive around it, which could pretty much level like four or five houses, went off, but the nuke didn't, which is probably why you're here today listening to this here podcast. Although, reading this, it's only got to be by the sight of God that we are, because the book not only covers this particular incident, which if you want, there is a show on it. I think I geeked about it or freaked about it because I went to go watch it, and apparently Obama had a final address that everybody had to cover. So I just went out and bought myself the book. But this also includes the history of not only the building of the atomic and hydrogen bombs, the fight among the various militaries to get their own, the fight to get it out of civilian control, which actually made sense because if your civilian control's been obliterated, the military need to be able to control and respond. And it even to the point where, like, okay, the atomic core, which is what makes the atomic bomb atomic, is stored in one area, and the actual warheads stored in a different area. And we're talking, this is back then when the warheads were probably the size of a semi-truck. So, you know, only one fit in a pre-B-52 bomber. It talks about the horrendous amount of accidents there have been involving nuclear weapons. And, you know, reading this, you're kind of like, and I'm up to the point in the book where they're still trying to decide what to do, because apparently the Titan II uses two different mixtures. Both of them are highly corrosive oxidizers. Matter of fact, one of the guy talks about it. There was a fire in one, and when they went down to, they finally got the fire out and the oxidizer out of it. They didn't find the people that were down there. They just found the shadowed outlines of the, kind of like a reverse shadow. Everything was black, and there was, what was the body that got eaten away by this? Yes, I enjoy my books reality busting. So when I read my comics, I'm ready for a little fantasy. Plus, I'm also not one to hide my head in the sand, which is why I read Fast Food Nation. Believe me, I couldn't eat chicken for about a year, and I still don't sparingly. This also ties in to what I studied in college, superpower relations. And you know, we don't talk about it much nowadays because we have the war on terrorism, which is much more interesting because terrorism can go on and on forever, whereas you got to have another superpower to have a nuclear arms race. North Korea, I guess we're kind of looking at you. But this actually kind of declassifies some of the stuff that we just didn't know what was going on when I studied it. Really, you need about 10, 20 years before you start realizing, well, let's put it this way. All that stuff we learned about, the bomber gap, the missile gap, the tank gap, it wasn't true. They talk a lot about during the Eisenhower years when the military was built, they've got missiles, they launched Sputnik, we've got to build our command, they've got, we're being outdone, they'll be able to do a first strike against us and we won't be able to respond. And Eisenhower was very cool and kind of fended everybody off and didn't do anything about it. Why, you ask? He had access to U-2 spy plane information. They were flying at will above the Soviet Union, which, you know, really pissed off the Soviet Union, but there was no missiles being built. He knew there were no missile gap. He knew there was nothing like that that these guys were all worried about. And so that's why he kind of fended it off. And, of course, when he ended, he gave his famous military-industrial complex speech, which he didn't really do a lot to fend off. But here we are years later, and oh, well, what you gonna do? On the plus side of things, I got two really cool Hot Wheel cars in the mail today.
We're all going to die! Hot Wheels.
Hot Wheel cars. Well, one of them was close to that. I got the Despicable Me Grummobile. If you ever recall the movie, it's just kind of a big submarine-shaped thing with rocket engines, and he pokes his little head out, and it's just as ridiculous as it sounds. And, of course, who could forget the terror? If you were a dog, Corey, who would be your greatest villain? Matter of fact, I'll make it even easier for you. This isn't even an Astro Store. I'll give you the dime. If you were a Dalmatian, who would be your arch enemy?
Cruella De Vil.
And I got her Hot Wheel.
Oh!
Of her car. Yeah, the Cruella De Vil, I don't know what the hell it was. Cadillac? Long car that honked along? So I have it up there. Proudly with my other cars, my Hot Wheels, the Yellow Submarine, the Batmobile, the Monkey Mobile, the Homer Mobile. Homer Mobile? How much does this thing cost? Ugh. So we talked about one of the podcasts you'll have to wait till January to listen to that we recorded last
Wednesday.
Yeah. Do we want to give the title, or do we want to
make... Make them wait.
You kind of blew it on the Facebook page. I suppose people could go look at the Facebook feed and discover it. I mean, it's not like, you know, somebody abandoned it and moved to Iowa, so we picked it up or anything like that. So what I did on the, I was sitting at home, and I'm like, oh, man, I got, like, it's noon. I got hours to go before I went out and did some old-fashioned geeking. I hit a number of shops, Source, a couple half-price books, Hot Comics, Richfield, all on my way towards where we met to do our here podcast. Some of the stuff I picked up was kind of cool. At Half Price Books, I picked up a Identity Crisis number 7. Not all that remarkable, except it was signed by the late, great Michael Turner.
Ooh.
And I was kind of like, oh, okay. I don't believe I actually have one of his autographs in my collection, so I have that. Or I may flip it and put it on eBay. It all depends on how I feel like when I wake up tomorrow. Some days I just got to flip stuff. I also picked up from Hot Comics in Richfield, they're apparently half pricing a lot of their Doctor Who toys, so I picked up the Curator. And if you watched I forget the name of the show, but it had the Gallifrey Falls painting with it. It was the one where the three doctors got together to save Gallifrey. Oh, damn, I just gave away a spoiler. Oh, well, maybe they'll deal with it with the new Doctor Who. They certainly haven't with the old one. That's pretty much it. Like I said, I've just been reading the book, shopping, and I'm sure next week I'll not only will I have stuff to geek on because Box Day is coming, so I'm always excited for that. I want my box now. I suppose I could open my Thanos copter. I never did open that. Did you open yours?
Yes, of course. Well, it's
cool.
Right here in my hand.
I don't want to know about that. I thought your giant-sized man thing was always hand nearby.
No, it's on the shelf.
Oh, okay.
It's been on the shelf for years. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks. You've been a beautiful crowd. Don't forget to tip your wait staff. They're working hard for you.
Please clap.
Jeb Bush liked that joke.
He did. No crickets, though. Did you got some geeking?
I did mine already.
Oh, see what happens when you screw up the schedule? You got to stop doing that. Well, believe it or not, kids, you've spent the last, how long? What's the time, the official timer at, Corey?
An hour and a half.
And remember what we say every week, and I'll toss it to you, because I don't.
The comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe?
I hate it when people accuse me of lollygagging when I'm quite clearly dilly-dallying. Corey, hit my music.
Done, bitches!